The grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called... the name escaped me.
Obviously, showering's always a big issue for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
Tiger was like a wit lead.
A bit of advice for the player. Yeah. Sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here and I'll say, this'll do a little bit early.
Oh, this'll do a little bit early indeed, Kerry O'Keefe. What a show we've got for you today. New Zealand have knocked over Australia. Those skeleton hiders have beaten us in the first of five T20 internationals over there in New Zealand. We're talking IPL auction. We're talking Sachin Tendulkar's son getting picked up. We're talking India, England, third test preview, Sheffield Shield, Faf du Plessis retires. Mark Butcher is on the show, Pezzy lad. We've also got a hashtag AskTGC involving a Bairstow story. Sort of. This episode is brought to you, as they all are, by Budgie Smuggler. You can use the code CHAMP for free shipping at checkout. That's budgiesmuggler.com. My name is Ian Higgins. I am joined by Sam Perry, as always, and forever and eternity. How are you, Pezzy lad?
Hey. Really well, thanks. Great to be covering a bit more global cricket over the last few weeks. And also specifically, he goes, it's been great to have just a few days away from recording, as you would know, given that you do also sit opposite
Fuck,
me
what
for,
was I doing?
Forever and eternity. Oh, you were recording by yourself, I think. No, we had a few inquiries from a new audience on YouTube. Where's the latest video? Which is nice. That's nice. But it was nice to have a few days away. But I did realise... Mm-hmm. Going away, I went down the coast with my family to spend time with my wife, my mother-in-law, and it's
and
really,
your two.
It's a really and the two boys. Don't know about the confluence of those two things. Put up a little Instagram pic.
Yeah,
says boys. Genuinely didn't realise that it'd be taken the way that it was, and that's my bad.
That is your mistake. Yeah,
I realise the great cricketer does kill you. It ruins words
100%
for you, and I realised that a few days in to this. Brief getaway. So my mother-in-law is a very good cook, and to help out, we have a 2.5-year-old and a 6-month-old, and she's very helpful in like making dinner, like just taking some hours out of the day for us, which is really lovely if you've got that support. So sitting around the table, and again, like I've said, you know, TGC ruins words for you, and so she's made a mixed grill, right? And it's just great. It's sensational. She does, it gives it the whole hoopla. It's on the barbecue. It's in the oven. She's really got it tenderized. It's looking fantastic.
That's good.
And we're sitting around the table, and it's always fun because you've got a 2.5-year-old who's carrying on.
Cool. Right?
And we're trying to coax him into eating some stuff or whatever, and she's loving talking to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a mixed grill. And and my mother-in-law, Jan, lovely, lovely woman. Get on with it, great. She says to my little boy, Ted, she goes, do you want some more choppy? And it's a pretty, like, it's not a formal occasion.
Yeah.
But I'm keeled over.
Yeah,
like,
course.
I've got, you know, the best laughs are the ones that are suppressed, you know.
Yeah,
I've got tears coming out of my eyes, vibrating.
Mm.
And she's talking just a lovely, cutesy voice. You want some more choppy, darling? I'm like, can't deal with this. Just stand up and leave. Tori's just shaking her head. That's exactly what's going on.
So, what are you laughing at? How long have you got?
Exactly. Yeah.
How long have you got?
Jan's like, what have I said?
Hey, yeah. Man. Well, you said the chop king. He sits.
That's right. Yeah. Where do I start? It's 2003, and I'm in the Drummond Oval change room, and Gavin Roberts is naked. I'm just saying he was the first nude guy I saw. That's all. Nothing more. And a really good bowler.
There has to be a butcher out there called the chop king. There has to be. Just a local, I want to say courtesan, but he's a butcher. And he's named the shop the Chop King. That has to be one.
Uncle Chop Chop.
Fucking hell.
It's the word's ruined. It's gone.
Yeah.
Let's just, yeah. He's chopped on. Has he?
He's right next door to the store, Chop Up. Pez.
Yeah.
We always like to start in a sort of, in a weird way.
Yeah.
Fans of the social media accounts would have seen we posted a thing the other day. It's gone around the internet a little bit. And
it had gone around for a few days before.
Do you want to set this up?
Yeah, I'll set this up. Like, we do like to just start with our roots, talk about club cricket and the themes within.
Yep.
It's just variation on one theme, really, but, you know, it resonates. still here. I got sent this clip by a lot of people across a broad spectrum of the game, it must be said, from the lepers to the kings.
Yeah, Hall of Famous.
To the Hall of Famous. Mm. Asking, you know, just please send it round. So I present to the listener and the viewer, if you haven't seen this, and it's likely you have, what I believe to be a very important piece of cricket art, you know, like Da Vinci's The Last Supper.
Similar.
This is the definitive sound of cricket at club level, ladies and gentlemen. Listening.
Catch it! Fuck!
Now, here goes.
Let's this break is it down. Why,
this is like a mosaic, you know. Yeah. Like there is so much going on.
It's like a magic eye.
So much going on. So I think this first started on TikTok, and it's actually filmed from square leg.
Right.
And it's actually masterfully filmed for what it presents and what it doesn't present well.
Mm-hmm.
But what you see in the vision is there's a keeper in short sleeves.
Yeah.
Right, to kick off.
Wearing school shoes.
You see a terrible shot. It's neither attack nor defence. It's just a swing of the bat that happens to connect with the ball that flies what looks to be sort of mid-on, wide mid-on. And one of the next best things about it, he goes, is as it's in there, as you hear the sound of the ball on willow and then the cry of catch it, which we all know that cry, then there's the silence and anticipation. You can hear the wind sweeping through the microphone as everybody waits and all eyes are fixated on somebody who you then hear stumble and fumble, and it's a little kind of...
There is a little bit, oh no.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bit like that, a quivering voice.
It's a brief flurry before you hear the thud of the ball on the ground, before the climax. The climax, which is...
Fuck! Fuck! Fuck!
So beautifully enunciated. I just want to say, like, and then obviously the suppressed giggle afterwards.
Yeah.
There's so much to it. And it's so beautifully filmed because you don't see it. The drop catch. Now, I say it's a drop catch because a lot of people are out there saying, well, we don't know whether that's the batsman making that noise or whether it's the bowler. And like, I'm telling you.
I know.
It ain't the fielder and it ain't the batter. The reason you can tell it's a drop catch is because, like, the short cover's standing there forlorn afterwards, resigned, unmoved, arms side by side, arms to his side. There's no cheer, just the echoed sound of a frustrated bowler. And I just want, just again.
Fuck!
That. That word and that it's more than a drop catch, he goes.
Yeah,
we know
it is, yeah. Yeah.
That's not just a wicket gone begging.
Fuck.
That's why am I here?
Fuck.
Relationship troubles.
Fuck.
Career indecision.
Fuck.
Climate change.
Fuck.
Stokes bombing Hazelwood.
Fuck.
Pant bombing Lion with his head down.
Fuck.
It's everything.
Yeah, it's all
there. I think it's a work of art.
The way it echoes and it does more than echo, it reverberates
exactly
through like the. I imagine that game being played in Hong Kong for some reason. You know, you've got grounds in Hong Kong, and they're like they're just a little patch of grass surrounded by these, like, I want to say monoliths, but these like huge buildings all surrounding it, and it sort of reverberates in like this wind bracket circling around. Yes, and it's sort of the reverberation of it, like, hits like the core of you, hits like the very sternum, like your sort of chest plate almost, gets you there. There was so much layer, there was so many layers to that.
It's
there was
perfect.
So much, it's perfect.
It's such a lonely.
That's the real sound of cricket.
It's the real sound.
It's a real sound of cricket.
You might listen to, and it is it's an institution, grandstand. They'll talk about the sound of summer, etc. And it's a very important institution in Australian cricket. World cricket, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they'll say the sound of summer is, you know, leather on willow. No. That's the sound. That's the sound. Sorry, it's true. Anyway.
And also, Pez, like, as we've said many times, if you are the angriest, that means you care the most.
I had that down here myself. Sure.
So
exactly.
That's
all he's really communicating.
That's really communicating, yeah. You know when like a ball gets hit in the air and it's hit towards the worst fielder and you know it's going down. But that doesn't stop you from getting really angry when it does go down. Like it wells up from your from the balls inside you. And when that moment like slaps the palms, goes to ground, it's like this release of like fuck. I mean, again, just yelling out fuck.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful game.
It's a wonderful game. And one of the times that it is wonderful, he goes, is when that catch you're talking about is actually taken. Because occasionally it is, and it is, you are wide-eyed with surprise. Your eyeballs nearly pop out.
Mm. That's one of the great ones where I am the batsman in that scenario.
Yeah,
people laugh. I was like, this boy never catches him. Oh, fuck me. fuck me.
They never drop it when it's you.
I remember playing a game once and I pulled a half tracker from a part-time off spinner to a bloke who had been sub-fielding and he was someone's dad. And he was at square leg.
He was someone's dad.
Mate, and then we're all someone's dad, not me, but.
It's like the victim of a robbery or something. You know what I mean? That's someone's dad.
That's someone's dad, yeah. but it was this like, it was this rank half tracker that was on the way down for the third bounce.
Yeah.
Pulled it straight to square leg. It's not straight, it was like to the guy's right. This bloke was wearing someone else's whites. He had to come on the field because his son was injured or someone was injured. So this guy's dad was watching, takes his fucking hanger. Hilarity going around.
Yeah.
And it's like, I am minutes away from ending everything here.
People on the ground laughing as you trudge off. And like, I know that particular vision, if you're caught at square leg or mid-wicket or something, you can see that it's usually the right hand or the non-dominant hand, maybe the left hand stuck out, and the ball actually just stops in the hand. So you can still see the seam like there's shock with the ball just glued to the hands. Oh, okay, you got Velcro on your hands, do you, mate?
It's like that, it's like a game with the Velcro palm bit with a tennis ball. Yeah, it's just you didn't catch it, you stopped it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's that wonderful start to the show. Hey, Pez, not sure if you caught this though. Now, Cameron Green.
Oh, hang on. We've got to do the anti-vax protesters.
Oh, okay. We'll do it. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. So there's obviously been some talk around about the safety of vaccines, all this kind of gear. Now, there was some protests all around Australia, if you're listening from overseas. And these protests in Melbourne specifically, was it down at Faulkner Park? Is that where it was?
Oh, I think it was everywhere.
It was just everywhere. Everywhere. Just anti-vaxxers everywhere getting out there.
It was the March for Millions attended by hundreds.
Yeah.
It was called the March for Millions.
Also, the jab isn't compulsory in Australia. I'm not sure if they know that. So they don't have to take it. They don't want to.
I thought there was a very deft metaphor in it, you know, because that maybe these protesters thought that, you know, cricket was a symbol of toxicity. And they wanted to stop it.
You know, I mean? I played in some field with some syringes on it. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. You know, we've all been fucking afraid of needles at certain grounds, but we don't need these fucking mouth breathers attending cricket games. It was hard to sort of put myself. Sorry, I just smashed the table.
Jesus.
Hard to put myself in the position of the cricketers because when we play, so let's just say, you know, mid 2000s, for example, when you're sort of 18, 19, I was sort of just imagining what life would have been like had anti vaxxers invaded one of our games in like third grade or something. Mm-hmm. I was just imagining like blokes who were just sitting in the sheds with form guides or the social pages, you know, ranking, you know, and like late 20 ranking women horse groups.
That's right.
Group zero, group one, etc.
Yeah.
Then taking on these au naturel fuckwits invading the game, and just that exchange for me,
natural fuckwits.
Yeah, you know, like their little contrarian like identity play,
right?
Wouldn't exist without the marvel of modern medicine. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You can't have that contrarianism without the marvel of modern medicine.
Sure, right? Sure.
So I'm just imagining, you know, guys with form guides taking on these fuckwits. And I just don't know.
We've spoken in the past, haven't we, about guys walking on the field, like basically walking through the slips cord and on a public field, and then the game starts like, mate, what the fuck are you doing? It's like, I've paid my rates for this ground.
At least they've paid rates, those people.
Pez, I don't know if I've told the story before. I wasn't playing this game, but I was playing against Bankstown. The week before, this was about early 2000s. It was a fifth grade game. The week before, they had played a game, and there was like a soccer game going on the field, and the game had to start. So the umpires, captain's like, guys, I'm sorry, we've got the ground. This is Sydney grade cricket. I don't think you understand how serious.
Don't you
this
understand?
Is.
Like 50 years ago, only white people lived in this area, so therefore. We have the reins of this ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the local footballers didn't take too kindly to this message. Mm. They came back in the afternoon and there's like 500 people on the ground playing a soccer game and the game had to be abandoned.
And that's the funny thing. Cricketers would be like, man, cricket's the game. They can actually organise 500 people to come down. Sydney grade cricket hasn't been able to arrange that for about 120
years. Most teams can't get 11.
Exactly. You see, great cricket was on TV on the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sydney versus Randy Peets in the final.
Final.
Like, Sydney doesn't realise this. It was my old club, but they collapsed at Drummoyne Oval. That's exactly what we used to do in PGs as well. They were none for 80 off eight overs, chasing 230.
Right.
All out, 220. They don't understand that's actually a curse.
Right, okay.
From Poitevin Gray. Anyway, that's a niche reference.
Yeah, that is.
Right. Cameron Green.
Now, he's playing some great cricket as well. Fuck, yeah. No, we're talking a lot about just shit that doesn't matter.
Talk about great cricket. It matters more than anything.
He scored, Cameron Green scored 201 for his club side on the weekend. Now, we had an email in from Sean Duffy. He emailed us and he said, first grade is a bit too easy for Cam Green. 201 not out for Subi Floriot today. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Is that right, Subi Floriot?
I don't know. We tried to say Golem the other day.
Yeah, true. My son was playing under 17s before I saw the start of it. Fuck, he's a big boy. I look forward to hearing you guys talk about it.
It's like, you know.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. It's kind of...
Have you seen footage?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, 201 was an unfortunate score for those who think Cam Green is height-shamed. You know?
Yeah.
It really just made... It was a natural connection people are making. But, yeah. You know, like...
It's like in the UK, you get a dollar a run. Dollar a centimetre.
You're a good-looking rooster. So...
You're talking to me?
Oh, I'm talking to you. Thank you.
That's very kind.
You'd probably walk down the street and sort of understand that there may be eyes on you on occasion as they're walking past. You know, and you're not going to admit it. I'm just going to speak for you. But I don't really get this.
Sure.
But, like, eyes would just linger for a little bit and someone might turn their head or something like that. Imagine Cam Green. Imagine how many times... I can see Sean Duffy says, fuck, he's a big boy. How many times would Cam Green just hear that kind of whisper in this, fuck, he's a big boy?
I reckon that... Elite athletes would hang around with elite athletes because then, like, you think about guys in the NBA. Yeah, I know he's big for them, but you think about the guys in the NBA, like Steph Curry looks tiny, right? And he's like 6'3". So there is a broader conversation about the paradigm of beauty, I suppose, and what's like socially acceptable. How high you can be?
Yeah.
Not now talking about how high is he?
Mm.
But there's great footage of this innings on my cricket social pages, and he's just fucking whacking a 14-year-old keeper up to the stumps. This bloke's played some boomer about 2 weeks ago.
I know.
Great experience for that young guy, though. Great experience for him.
Couple of comments. I know, poor bloke. They've picked that part of the innings because it wasn't like 200 off 100 balls. It was 250 balls. Yeah. Another mature innings.
He really grounded out.
Yeah. But they've obviously picked that part of the innings where he's just walloped this poor child. He's like, you made him look like a child, like we all do in front of Cam Green.
Yeah.
And there's all these comments underneath saying, oh, you know, well, he's fucking playing third graders here. It's like, man, he's Cam Green's making everybody look like a third grader. You understand?
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't be able to see that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Have you got any, like, stories of... You played against a number of current... Mm. You played against any current test beer fight?
Yeah,
you
like Warner was going around.
Warner, yeah, Smith, Bollinger. Guys,
yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, you got the Phil Jakes. He's got 300. Yeah.
There's a few. Everyone was playing Sydney grade cricket at that
time. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
The main thing I noticed about playing against those guys was how they often just looked really relaxed because they played so much cricket. Like, the guys would just stand at mid-off and probably just in their own thoughts and not really, like they're just sort of minding their own business, like going about their work like dead-end professionals, already crushed by cricket, but like, oh, I'll just wait for my turn and get my wickets and my stats.
Yeah.
And, what do I remember? I mean, I've told, I think, sort of gone over a few stories here. I mean, if I told Nathan Horrocks got littered once in a game, one of our opening bowlers littered him and broke his helmet.
Yeah.
And then somebody ran out his Blues helmet. And he actually, to his credit, refused it on the basis that he didn't want to be batting in a state lid. So, like,
and that. Corby's Aussie lid.
Exactly. So we have done this before. Yeah. Because it's the same. It's the same colour.
Yeah.
I saw the other one I really 34. Enjoyed is. Played with Russell Arnold.
Yep.
And he
was a good player.
He was a good player.
And, friend of the show.
Yeah, you'd play on like a spicy wicket and he'd come out to bat without any helmet or hat and smash guys over cover, like just flourish.
Yeah.
And that was always, that was one for me that was like, it's just a Sri Lankan, like mercurial sort of superstar.
Yeah.
And so that just the incongruity of like oneself being a scratchy, you know, person who maybe wasn't a first grader but played first grade.
There's
a difference.
Sure.
Scratching around, outside off stump, bat out here, feet everywhere or nowhere. Then he comes out in the same conditions and goes whoosh. Yeah.
It is funny, isn't it, as the amateur when you're playing against professionals, you're like, I've seen this on television. It's actually not dissimilar to when Pekowski was talking about he faced his first ball. It's like, oh, I played PlayStation. Yeah. It's not dissimilar to that where, like, you recognise the shapes and the way they, the stickers on the back.
It would be distracting. Shape up.
I remember... I think I've told this story. I sub-fielded once when Cowan was playing for Sydney Uni.
Right.
And I'd had this massive circuit the night before, but I was at my game early and I had to sub-field for first grade.
And you're a good fielder.
And not touching that. And which is what I said to most of the balls that came past me.
Like it.
And Cowan was, I think Cowan was still in the test setup at the time, but he was playing for Sydney Uni. He was at Sydney Uni number one. And I was just like in this fucking weird headspace where I was obviously still over the limit. And Cowan was batting. I was like, it's fucking cool. And then like,
did
realized,
you drive that day?
I don't recall. Mm. No, I, no, I didn't. No, I didn't. I didn't. Okay. I didn't. And I realized that I'd missed a ball. A ball had been bowled and I wasn't even watching. I was a square leg. Ed Cowan was batting. Who was buying?
We sort of, you know,
might have been Matt Nicholson was buying for Gordon. So it was like genuinely like
mesmerized by watching like some TV shapes.
A little bit at the time, but to the point where I turned around and a ball had been bowled and I just missed it. Nothing.
That's what
happened.
TV does to you. I remember when I went to my first Manchester United game, when I happened to get, I used to watch it all the time, and happened to get tickets near where the cameras film, so they were good tickets. I don't know how it happened. It just happened.
Yeah.
And I felt like I'd walked into the TV. That was the shot.
I remember Bollinger
bowling and I'm being distracted by that. When he used to run in, his chin was quite high. Do you sort of remember that when he'd stick his face up a little bit? And I remember him running in. Oh, I overthink things all the time.
Sure.
And you'd just be a bit distracted by that. Oh, I've seen that on TV before. Yeah. And now I can't see the ball.
Propel his missile at 145 k's an hour at you.
Every first one smashed into my thigh pad. I just didn't see it. Anyway, it just popped up in the air. I'm threes.
This will be fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for today.
International cricket.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the Skeleton Hiders beat Australia last night and I refuse to call them by their national name because I want to know what's going on there. But New Zealand too good, way too good for Australia last night. Now let's give it the caveats. Well, they've sent over the BBL 11. You know, plenty of good players not available for Australia. I've got to say, disappointing performance though from Australia. From the 11 that they put out Australia is still a good, still good.
Yeah,
you're missing some names. That's fine, but it's still good. And Australia had New Zealand what 3 for 4 for 50, 3 for 20, something like that. Great start. Williamson picked up early as well by Daniel Sams, but you know what? It looked like they're having a really good time over there, the boys.
Well, yeah, and I guess we're learning more and more. There's no shame in losing to the Skeletons.
That's right.
You know,
no shame
because of. You watch Kane Williamson in an interview and you're like, I don't want to fuck with you, mate, because you're just a bit 10 out of 10 for me and there's something going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, lots of talk about it.
Can I ask you, though, at the top, though? Now, we watched the first part of this game together and I was like, I get the feeling like this is one of these rivalries but in Australia and New Zealand in cricket that only exists on one side. Mm. New Zealanders would fucking love nothing more. No, I don't want to speak for them, but I will.
Please.
They would love nothing more than to sweep Australia, fuck us in every game, smash us. And I feel like the rivalry for Australia is like, all good.
Yeah.
Like the Kiwis are nice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's just the dynamic of it, isn't it? Mm. And like we play our role, like being sort of a bit ignorant to it kind of fuels the rivalry even more. It's like Sydney-Melbourne.
Sure.
It's got everyone's playing their role. Yeah. But Australia just manages to do, I mean, we're going to talk about this with India England, like loving covering teams that aren't Australia.
Mm.
You know, Australia just manages to become the baddies and the ugly team wherever it goes.
Yeah.
You know, and no, you know, well, you have to be the ugly team when you play the Skeletons. But I noticed Simon Dool said, he goes, like, he was replying to Ravi Ashwin, Ravi Chandran Ashwin on Twitter.
Mm.
Ashwin said, great knock from Devon Conway 4 days too late post the IPL auction.
Right.
And Simon Dool said, not sure it matters. New Zealand players have continually been overlooked for second-rate Australians in the IPL for years. Seems outside of IPL, Big Bash is the only comp looked at. So there's certainly a chip from New Zealand there. You know, they've obviously pumped the BBL 11 and only a small handful of them get a bit of an IPL gig, whereas many of the Aussies do. So, I mean, I just think at the end of the day, the Aussies are just too relaxed and they need a strong man in there. They coach them. Someone to pull them in the line. Bit of a party over there, isn't it? A bit relaxed. What do we reckon?
Did look that way. Did look that way. I think Simon Dool's right. We'll get onto the IPL auction in a moment. But, Conway, 99 not out. Batted superbly. Ish Sodhi, 4 for 28.
And everyone sort of talked, Ish Sodhi. You know, I think Mark Waugh said on the comment, and we'll talk about Mark Waugh in a second, because they were the fucking star of the show.
That was the highlight.
But I think it was, it's a good opportunity for run scoring here against Ish Sodhi. There's some sort of Ish Sodhi discrimination that goes on. Everyone just thinks, we can pump this player. 4 for 28.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks later.
Yeah. Mm. It is weird because the wicket balls that he took were pretty pump. But he seems to do this consistently.
I know. And I maintain it's just luck the entire way through.
Yeah. But if it keeps happening, how lucky is it? Yeah, it's
do we
weird.
Do we have overrated players, he goes? Are we? I mean, it's fuck, only one game
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
So you're saying, you know, the BBL is the Premier League of 2002.
Yeah.
You say, or world class in their domestic league.
That is what I'm saying word for word.
But when they play internationals, they get pumped.
There's no doubt about it that Australia, because of like this, because of the place that cricket has in Australia and the Australia's place in the global
context, sphere.
You. Sphere, I was going to say
diaspora.
Sphere, yeah. Diaspora might be a better word for it. Okay. That like this, the celebrity nature of those players just means that they're elevated above perhaps equal or maybe even slightly better players that are from smaller countries like New Zealand.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. You can't, I mean, I don't want to get into like the IPL auction right now, but there are guys that went for like massive money in the IPL. There's fucking no way that they are better, pound for pound, they're better players by a significant amount than like good New Zealand players. It's just not true. So I agree. There's like an element of like celebrity that holds true with the entire cricketing globe as a consuming brand.
You're saying like there's a bit of Emil Heskey about Matthew Wade.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. And I also think that like if you're Australian, that means you're a good player. So.
And that's a hang. And that's again, a hangover. That's Steve Waugh's contribution.
Steve Waugh's contribution to the
IPL.
It's
the Australian tax.
Exactly. I
it's the Warne tax.
I truly subscribe to that. And I'm not saying the guys that got picked up in the IPL are bad players. They're not bad players, but like. Guys getting picked up for like 1.5, 2 mil, whatever. And guys from New Zealand who were maybe perhaps equally talented or have executed their skills and statistically are just not getting bought. That doesn't add up.
The New Zealanders know that though, don't they? They know that it's all Mayo from Australia. They know that they could go pound for pound with these guys. It's just the fans that subscribe to this idea, right? Oh, our players are superstars. Like international, they're not, people,
they
aren't,
are,
people
like,
aren't afraid of Australia anymore. International cricketers aren't afraid of Australia. Like, they've worked out the entire shtick. The tough guy game is nothing.
Yeah.
They know that.
Yeah. Well, we were talking this before, that watching as much other international cricket as I have, and we have perhaps as well, in the last little bit, it makes you realise how every other team, except for Australia, don't fucking carry on.
Yep.
It's unbelievable. Like, and it's the cricket's good, and especially India, England, it's like...
Coley got bowled and stayed at the crease.
Yeah, okay, okay. I'm not saying there's not, you know, it's not.
No, I've come up with one exception to it, so the entire rule's gone.
That's right. But even Bangladesh, West Indies, there's like all this good cricket being played, but like the identity of the Australian team is like, it's fucking carry on. Yeah. It's like, it's all about me.
That's
me,
our
me.
Thing. That's our brand.
It's our brand, yeah. It's
carry on.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just such less bullshit.
There's less bullshit, and it makes you realise how unnecessary it is. You can still be a great player and
literally
a good team.
No bearing. Well, there are players in the Australian team who don't carry on, like Cummins. He doesn't carry. I haven't seen him carry on yet.
No.
I'm sure he's got carry on in him.
Yeah,
but he's sort of above it, isn't he? Look, is there pressure on Aaron Finch? He goes, he hasn't made a run for many games. But then when I think of T20s, it's like, yeah, but we had a 50, and then we'll forget that happened.
Yeah, it's interesting to try and place this in the context of how important this series is, isn't it? Because like the World T20 Championship was supposed to be at the end of last year, right, in Australia. They obviously got pushed back because there was a thing going around.
Might have heard of it.
You might have heard about it. And now it's going to be in Asia, in India in what? October?
Yeah, November, October, November.
Right. So I guess it's important in that context. But to answer your question, I mean, he is probably our best ever T20 player. Watson would be in a conversation for that as well. Warner would be there or thereabouts as well. So
how much money does he have in the bank?
He's got credits in the bank. Yeah. He's got credits in the bank.
Not IPL credits this year.
Not IPL credits. And I know he had a lean summer with the Big Bash, with the Renegades. Really lean summer there. But he's not even close to the chopping block.
Yeah. Okay.
In my opinion.
All right. I was just thinking about the word chop. So that's what I wasn't staying silent because I disagree with you. Look, the star of the show last night, he goes, was
Mitch
Mark Waugh. It was Mitch Marsh, firstly. He was 45. It was his highest international score.
Yeah,
and
that.
Mark Waugh and David Warner commentating. Now, a lot of reaction to this on social, and a lot of it I felt was a bit wowser-ish.
Sure.
Now, here's my theory.
Okay.
Mark Waugh operates best in combination with people. Mark Waugh needs to be in combination. Something about David Warner in commentary sets Mark Waugh off.
Set him off.
And gets him right into that dressing room role that, frankly, I love.
Yeah.
Okay, a lot of people sort of get a little bit highbrow about it and say he doesn't do his research. That's Mark Waugh's brand, brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
That's how he works. There's a great place for that.
Yeah.
That is the entire... If Mark Waugh turned up researching things...
Yeah.
and actually getting into sort of modern cricket, the entire brand is destroyed. Mm. It doesn't work that way.
Mm. Be a side effect of the vaccine.
Exactly. So, you know, for example, like just him and Warner talking about the supercars.
Yeah.
You know, he was just baiting Warner about how much money he made. Perfect generational conflict. I'm very much here for it. And he does it well. He does it very, very well.
Yeah.
You know, King of Jordan behind me here in his fucking car. You know, got a few bob up your sleeve, do you?
Yeah.
Well, the other one, you know, when they were wondering why all these balls were going to Ashton Agar and he's misfielding a bit.
Yeah.
You know? And Mark Waters said, ah, oh, he's run out of carrots.
Run out of carrots.
He's
run out of carrots. I've never heard that expression before and I fucking lost it.
So good. We're howling.
Yeah.
I think more of Mark Orr and David Warner for me. No, truly. Because then they talked about cricket and Warner talking about cricket, like with so many of them, was very, very compelling.
Yeah.
They talked about class stuff. Like they'll talk about working class stuff, rugby league teams. I was fully into it. I'm a huge defender of Mark Orr and David Warner in partnership. Cheers.
More of it. And there's four more of these games to go against the skeletons, against the fuckwits. Hey, Pez, the IPL auction happened. Not sure if you caught this.
Sort of.
Now, where to start with this? I think my favourite thing was that Glenn Maxwell got picked up by Royal Challengers Bangalore for $2.52 million of your Australian dollars.
Yes.
He got released by his team last year after, you might remember, he didn't hit a single six last year. Sehwag was giving him some shtick online. He was into him. And now, so he's left that for less money. And now he's getting more money by picked up by a different team despite having a worse season. I'm into that.
Hell yeah.
I can't figure out the correlation of like what is, who earns the money? Who earns the money? And why do they earn that amount of money? Is it stat space? Is it money bullshit?
Mate, I mean, there's probably 1,000 people listening to this just wanting to just stats nerd you on IPL auctions and how free markets work and stuff like that.
Sure.
It's a little bit of a mini market.
Yeah, Dogecoin.
It's Dogecoin, it's GameStop, it's fucking Melbourne Capital. You don't understand. Yeah. They're actually, teams want all rounders this year. That's why it's actually, they need guys to do both and whatever. They've already got their batters and whatever. I mean, so there's a true answer on free market basis to why Glenn Maxwell got picked up for the amount that he did. Or whatever. But then also, it's just funny that you can get released by a team for basically underperforming and make more money at another team.
It's great.
Because Coley says, get him.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. And then you sort of shrug your shoulders. Oh, Coley and Maxwell on the same team. That could be good.
That sounds good.
Something good could happen with that.
Yeah.
My favourite was Jai Richardson.
Hard to go past that, to be fair. Yeah.
The reason I liked it was because they interviewed him the next day and the word he described his reaction as being was nauseous. And like, I just love the honesty of that.
That's
because
great.
How many guys have we talked to over the 148 of your podcast episodes that we've done who've been picked up by the IPL, and when you ask them about the experience of essentially having their life changed by amount of money and what was happening, they always kind of gravitate towards like, oh, I sort of had it on the background.
I woke up next morning, a couple of ticks.
Yeah, did ya?
Yeah.
Did ya? You weren't 30 centimetres from the screen with your eyes fucking peeled like you had three pingers.
Yes. Someone bid for me,
exactly.
Please. Bid for me,
so
data.
So he was honest, you know. I like the idea, like it was specific. I was nauseous. Like I like the idea he was breathing into a bag.
That's
In and out.
That's right. I love that anxiety. So he got picked up by Punjab Kings for $2.48 million of your Australian dollars. That's 1,400 lakh. Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Let us know.
I'm sure they will. I apologise for getting that wrong. Immediately. The idea of nausea, like, the anxiety that would induce is like, I've been picked up for a fucking shed ton of cash here. I'm going to have to bowl. I can't throw. My shoulder's been cooked for 2 years. I have to bowl it in when I feel it short short fine leg.
Yeah.
Mate, you nailed it. It's great anxiety.
And Steve Smith didn't, like, Steve Smith took
Delhi Capitals, $389,000.
He took a $2 million haircut.
He'll invest that to turn into $8 billion. Don't worry about that.
I know Michael Clark said, he's like, it's the sort of amount where you might do a hammy on the eve of the...
What?
Yeah.
Fucking hell, I'm doing hamstrings for years.
Exactly.
I ain't getting that kind of cash.
And the other thing Pup said was on Aaron Finch. He just said, because Aaron Finch didn't get picked up.
He did get picked up,
right?
Yeah.
And he said, well, either the IPL's wrong or Australia's wrong. Selecting Finch. So the IPL doesn't want Finch. Australia does want Finch. I don't know what Clark's kind of getting at there, whether he's who he's saying is wrong. But the IPL didn't want Finch this year. Could be market forces and all that kind of gear, but you'd think, you know, he's a top echelon player. IPL saying
Australian captain.
Not this time, Aaron.
This is what I wonder about the IPL auction and the, not the legitimacy of it, but like the, who gets picked up when and for and why and for how much? Like because
what I wonder.
Mate, I'm fucking up nights thinking about this, mate. Yeah, like because like Mo and Ali got picked up right by Chennai for $1.3 million.
Yeah.
US. And the conversation is like, well, was that because he fucking gave it a whack at Chennai? Got 43 of 18 balls. He got picked up very late in the auction as well. Then like two teams were bidding for him. Chennai picked him up.
Great.
And it's like, if that's all it takes, then who was saying about Dool was talking about
Devin Conway.
Oh, sorry, Ashwin was saying that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, so one innings, if it's on TV, can get you an IPL gig. Is that might be true, but it's like it feels all very like, you know, in football terms, in soccer terms, like when the World Cups used to happen that in the 90s and 2000s, you never get to watch these games because YouTube didn't exist, right?
Yeah.
And like in beIN Sport and all this kind of like streaming services. So you couldn't watch every single game. So when a guy from like Senegal or whatever gets picked up and he's like, does a really good World Cup, he's like, this guy's fucking amazing.
Yeah. You can't put together like low res highlights packages of yourself. Yeah.
With some fucking Tektro EDM.
Exactly. Yeah.
Why is the music always fucking heinous in those? I mean, I'm not saying this to be fucking John Mayer.
Yeah.
Your body is a wonderful.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be PLO. Depends on the I like the choice of soundtrack. What do they sort of go for with that? Anyway, I also noted here, guys, we haven't picked this up, but there's a crossover between the IPL and an England New Zealand Test series, and England have already said that there's going to be some players who miss the Test series owing to the IPL.
There is so much cricket,
I know,
and Australia just doesn't play ever.
Yeah, it's normal.
All good. I mean, they played last night, but. Bit of Mickey Mouse stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So there's crossover between the IPL happening and this England New Zealand series. That's going to be a good series. Good series in England as well, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
I think it is. It's part of it's actually New Zealand's first away tour in a couple of years.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. They're letting them play away.
Yeah. Now New Zealand played Bangladesh before then as well. They're playing at home. That should be really. Okay. Tight contest. Now, another one, Pez, Sam Billings, friend of the show, got picked up by Delhi Capitals, 2 crore. Good to see him get a bit of money. I know he's a little bit short. that's so unnecessary. Now, Sachin Tendulkar's son, Arjun, got picked up by the... exactly. By the Mumbai Indians for the base price of 20... I'm going to say that word again, lakh. I think it is. I really apologise if that's wrong. But there's a lot of conjecture that I've seen on the internet, which is, you know... always a reliable source, that's saying like, Arjun's not a great player.
Right, yeah.
Does that fucking matter? Get Tendulkar's son in the team. Get his boy in. Hey, fuck yeah.
We've talked in the Australian context about the sheer safety of just seeing Steve Waugh and Ricky Ponting on a balcony.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing those forearms, seeing that squint.
Yeah.
How many runs or wickets that adds to your team. It's incalculable, but there is, you know, you probably could quantify it with a bit of sort of quant stuff.
Mm.
I'm sure it's the same with the name Tendulkar in the side.
How can you go wrong with that?
I was like, whatever. I don't care whether you play or not. Tendulkar.
Yeah.
Playing. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Who would that be? I mean, Austin Waugh's not playing great cricket this year. He's taken a year off cricket.
Mm. On the other hand, it would be quite hard being Tendulkar's son.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. Look at Don Bradman's son. He should change. Bradson. I don't know why he changed it to Bradson. I mean, is it poetic? Because I'm his son.
I'm his son, yeah.
Right in, if you're listening, John.
Pez.
Yes.
Fucking, it'll run over time here, mate. India v England. The third test starts on Wednesday. Now, this is a very interesting series for all parties. Everyone around the globe should be tuned in for this test match because if England win this game, then India cannot make the World Test Championship final. And then the fourth test, just if England win that fourth test, they will make the World Test Championship final. If they lose it, Australia will make the World Test Championship final.
Yeah.
So this is a pink ball test match. Yeah. It's at Sardar Patel Stadium in Ahmedabad. This is the brand new stadium, Pez. You might have seen this before. It's got 110,000 people capacity. They're selling 50% because of the COVID situation. So there's going to be 55,000 people at this game. Now, this ground, you may recall, Pez, this is the ground where Trump met Prime Minister Modi at the Namaste Trump rally last year. Do you recall this? This is the grand opening of this stadium happened last year. Let's have a listen to what happened then.
Okay.
All over the planet, people take great joy in scenes of Bhangra, music, dance, romance and drama, and classic Indian films like DDLJ and Choj. This is the country where your people cheer on some of the world's greatest cricket players, from Sachin Tendulkar to Virat Kohli.
It's the cadence of his speech. I miss it. I miss it. Not the person or the policies, for instance.
Yeah. Bit of a coat, but could be funny.
Bit of a coat, but said some funny stuff from time to time.
Things explained badly.
Bit of a coat, that's where this game has been played, Pez. New stadium, new pitch. No one really knows what this SG pink ball is going to do. I saw Cheshwar Pujara was saying that they've been using the Kookaburra pink ball domestically in India, but they haven't used the pink SG ball yet. So no one knows what the fuck is going to happen. But I had a look at the pitch online, Pez, and it's green.
Pitch is green, three days out. That's a three-day-out picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, famously, that's the picture that will decide.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, well, that'll bring England into it, I would have thought.
Well.
Surprised that India, after their huge victory on the pitch unfit to play on, depending upon where you were born and your cultural heritage.
That's right, that's right.
Would revert to a pitch that would suit England.
Well, let's make it fair.
But we've taken...
Let's make the pitches fair.
The picture, 3 days out, it's green.
Yeah.
So it is.
Yeah, and that's how it'll be and remain so. Well, it's interesting, isn't it, Pez? I mean, like, you would think that if England were going to win a test in this test series, this would be the best chance, pink ball, but they also said that in the Ashes when they played in Adelaide and they got fucking pumped. But you do feel like if there's any sort of consistency with, like, how these pitches are going to play, India will just make a fucking ragger. Why would they make it swing and seam?
I reckon, like, firstly, in this test series, which has been incredible to watch.
It's been really
good. For reasons we've outlined already. I'm really looking forward to the game. The bingo suggests that the next thing that happens is Kohli hits 278.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, with that accepted as a premise.
Yes, I've accepted
I think England should welcome another two-day shootout and just take a 50-50 chance on winning the toss.
Fuck yeah.
I think that's their best shot. I don't think it's kind of wrinkling India out with a bit of nipping around with Jimmy Anderson, who is one of the most skillful bowlers of all time.
Right.
I think it's just win that toss, baby, and don't bowl shit. And that's I think that's a better chance than sort of, oh, let's see if we can arm wrestle them over 5 days.
Mm. Now, we spoke to Mark Butcher in a moment. We'll get to that in a moment's time. We speak about this as well. But it's interesting to see the lineup. Now, I'm thinking about now. He was, in terms of the lineup, in terms of who's going to bowl, I wonder if it's worth playing the extra batsman. But then I think about, like, how hard it is to bat in India. If you play the extra batsman, are you guaranteeing yourself, I suppose you're not guaranteeing anything, but you give yourself the opportunity of another batsman scoring a 50. But I just think it's going to be so hard to bat there that, like, if, for instance, they bring Bairstow in, right? And they drop a bowler out because they think that it could be a 2-day shootout. So, like, because Stokes hardly bowled that last test match. I think Ollie Stone bowled like 3 overs in the fourth innings of that game. Broad hardly bowled in the first innings. Do you need 5 bowlers? Doesn't seem like, especially when you've got Stokes on the team. But if you play the extra batsman to try and get more runs, because I feel like England are short of runs, right? Without Root, I think they're cooked.
Yeah.
So is that a way to, like, balance the side a little bit, do you think? Or do you think that you have to play 5 bowlers in India with 2 spinners?
I just think for England to win over in India, a lot of things need to go right in terms of the conditions and the toss. Mm. And if that happens, then they're a chance. Mm. I think the makeup of the lineup is just completely contingent upon the sort of wicket that it is, because they obviously won the first game where the wicket was a little bit more supportive of bat. Well, it was, you know, for a long time, so they can win those kinds of games doing X's and O's here. But I think if it's a shootout, you're better off over-indexing on spinners and skill, because it was their bowling that lost in that game.
Yeah,
in the shootout. And I think with batting, and we will call it a shootout now, with those kinds of wickets where the ball explodes, with the batting, it's the Moeen innings is probably the blueprint.
Mm.
You could take those runs when you get them if you can get on top of somebody, which I don't think you can with India. But it's probably guys hitting over the top, Stokes, but just getting as many as you can and seeing if you can play from there after winning the toss. But otherwise, I don't know. I don't know if you can just sort of arm wrestle India. Otherwise, I don't think there's an answer out there that will give them the silver bullet.
Yeah. England. Now, what are you reckon about India? What sort of changes, if any, will they make? No changes? I mean,
I think Bumrah will come back in
Yeah.
With a pink ball.
Instead of?
I'm not sure.
Patel?
Axel Patel, no. Yeah. I mean, he was. I think he was meant to play the first game, but he was injured.
Okay.
Who's the third one? Is Ashwin Patel?
Oh, they played Yadav.
Yadav. He'd come in for Yadav.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Just a little bit more balance there.
That makes sense. Man, you look at the Indian team though, man.
I keep saying
this all the time, but like, you know, the Steve Waugh team, right? From 1 to 7, everyone averages 50.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that? You know, and it's like that never happens in international cricket in the history of the fucking code. But you look at this Indian team, and especially in India, from 1 through to like 9, especially now Ashwin's going to 500. They all average an enormous amount. So like to bowl them out, especially in India, is incredibly hard. But I just feel like there's a window here because of the pink ball.
Yeah.
No one really knows what's going to happen. And that's exciting.
And why would the BCCI invite England back into the series? Why would they do that?
Yeah.
They don't need to do that.
No.
The thing that scares me about India, and we've said it before, is that particularly after the Gabba, I just feel like they've got about 4 different ways to beat you.
Yeah.
The scary thing about the Gabba for me, there's many scary things, and we're actually still in shock, fetal position when we're not on camera, just under the desk for a good few hours.
That's right.
Shaking. Is that image of Pant at one end and Pujara at the other end. Like Pujara's playing for the draw, Pant's playing for the win. It literally was a symbol of the many ways they can skin the cat that is you in this situation, and you're being skinned.
Yes.
And I feel like India's like that as well. You want to play us in a shootout? We've got 18 spinners. You want to play us on a road? We've got Kohli and Pujara and whatever.
Yeah.
Want to play us with a pink ball? Every chance Bumrah and Sharma are more dangerous than Broad and Anderson in home conditions. Yeah. Every chance of it. Let Bumrah off the leash at home. Yeah. I'm not saying he's a dog. It's a metaphor. But let him. I mean, they just any way they want to do it, they can.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of things have to go right for England, and that may well happen. Hope it does. Going to be an awesome contest if it does.
It is really exciting. I mean, I suppose the thing about like day-night test matches, the reason they've been brought in, especially in Australia, is for viewing figures, right? For television viewing figures, because it's a great time. They spent those Adelaide test matches when the Ashes is on, the times match up nicely so that people in the UK can watch it and Australians can like finish work and they watch the last 2 sessions or whatever. It's fucking brilliant. But the problem is, in an Indian context, they don't fucking need a good time to watch it because they'll stop anything and they'll watch the cricket.
Yeah.
They watch this shit. So they're going to watch the actual games being played as well, you know? So it's like, so I wonder the longevity of how much they're actually going to continue playing day and night test matches, especially if they lose this one. It's like, why would we not just play in conditions where we can win? Because winning is good. That's what we want to do. I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. India could fucking roll through England here a couple of times and they win by an innings or, you know. But it does feel like without a ball being bowled, I just feel like England are in the contest way more so than what. The second test, you called it. We knew it was going to rag. Everyone knew that we're just going to make a Bunsen because fuck playing on flat pitches brings England into the game. Same as like making a green seamer. It doesn't make any sense. But I suppose we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Australia wants England to win this game.
Yeah, they do.
Which is strange.
They do.
That's a strange situation.
They do. All right, Pez, do you want to just go straight into Faf du Plessis retiring?
I just wanted to say one thing about the Sheffield Shield, just one thing. A couple of things. Khawaja's innings, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably got to be in the top 37 players in the country. Probably. He's not at the moment.
Mm.
It'd be great if he was. We could use it. Mitch Perry did well for Victoria against New South Wales. That's another Perry doing well in cricket that shunts me down the Google search. Doesn't matter. Smith and Labuschagne carrying on after getting out.
Right.
Just picked up one thing that I thought you might be interested in about the way they got out. So there's a bit of petulance from them. It is carry on. It looks terrible. It's ordinary. They should fix it up as adults. There's been a bit of talk about the way they were holding the bat as they were exiting the ground.
What?
I've seen it twice now, right? So Pete Lawler said in a piece today about Smith and Labuschagne's behaviour. Labuschagne's bat was upside down as he exited, as though this is a symbol of dissent. Silent descent. And then someone else wrote in. Oh, I actually got a DM from Jack Cronin. Shout out, Jack. Great Raiders content. Asking me, because someone had written to him saying, any chance we can carry the bat off by the handle? That's what it's for. Trudging off holding the blade is petulant and disrespectful to the bowler. He got you out. Hold the handle. Walk off. Now, come to me. I love this. more unwritten conventions of cricket. Like, so this idea, he goes, I want to run this by you.
Okay.
You can communicate your view of the umpire's decision and circumvent dissent laws by holding the blade in a particular position.
Yeah, okay.
Like Nero thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah.
You know, what do you make? Do you think when you hold, you know, that's something play. And then Lavishan had the bat upside down, trailing it along the ground as he was walking.
Oh,
off.
That's more like a child's rag.
Where?
That they hang on to. Like, what am I thinking of? Like Snoopy.
Yeah.
Like fucking Charlie Brown.
It's disconsolate. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you make of this? Do you think players are now communicating their dissent by holding the blade and not the handle as they walk
At
off?
At what point can you convey that you're disappointed? The only time you can be allowed to be disappointed is when you score 160 in a test match and you're like, I've really missed out today. Bringing into the question again, when is cricket good? The answer, never. Now, if you get out that you're not happy with the decision, are you... There's got to be some fucking leeway in terms of, like, you got to be allowed to show disappointment.
Yeah, for how long, do you reckon? What's the... Because I don't trust guys who get a really bad decision and they walk off like the fucking most moral person of all time. It's like, all right, you murder people. Do you know?
Yeah.
But there's a window. And yeah. I think Smith and Labuschagne go on too long.
I agree.
Now, it's a bit like...
I agree.
It's a bit like this level's a bit, you know, I can't believe I have to put up with these kind of decisions at this level.
Yeah. Yeah. There's bigger conversations about behaviour in the team again with that kind of shit. It just looks so bad. But
I'm just talking about holding the bat.
Well, on that. But we also see this, like, remember when Flintoff was scoring hundreds and 50s in the Ashes in 2005 and he started holding the bat midway through the blade? And it's like, what the fuck
to,
is
to
this?
To celebrate 50 and 100.
Yeah, and also, like, having the bat facing around the other way.
Yeah. That's become a sponsor thing, hasn't
it?
Yeah,
it's a sponsor thing.
I want to see guys hold the blade in two hands now. Hold it up like a shield.
Or like a child.
Yeah. Cradle it. There's all sorts of things you can do.
We saw Chris Gayle put his helmet. Doing the cowboy. We saw Chris Gayle put his lid on the handle and then lift it up. We saw Stoinis do that as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Conventions. I'm not sure about this conventional nature of like dragging your bat off behind you from the blade. That is like a child.
Dragging, yeah.
That's like a child's
blanket.
Well,
I think that's what we're getting at with these. But what about just holding the middle of the blade? Like, there's a suggestion you're not allowed to do that. That's an indicator of dissent or...
It's not dissent.
I think hold the bat however you want going off. Let's not nanny state that.
Yeah.
All right. That's nanny state stuff.
Yeah.
But I do like the idea that that's how players are communicating their displeasure with the umpire.
Yeah.
Anyway, thought you bite me to that. And Faf retired.
So Faf du Plessis retired. I don't know what else we can say apart from just announcing it.
Farewell to a real one.
Yeah, to a real one, yeah. I didn't realise he was going to be as good as he was. You know, he scored 100 at the WACA against Australia. And it might have been his first Test 100, actually, now I think about it, top of my head.
Yeah.
And... we didn't know much about him at that time, but then since then has become one of the best players in the world, captain of South Africa. But I suppose in a bit of a lean era of South Africa, coming off the back of like the Graham Smith era and before that, the Sean Pollock era.
Except when they play us.
Like
nothing lean
especially
about
in
that.
Australia, nothing lean about that.
Fatten themselves up when that
well,
happens.
Well, World Cup, they had a diabolical World Cup. I still knock Australia over in a dead rubber game for them, meaning that we played against England in the semi-final. But of course, the highlight of his entire career will always be Durban. Will always be Durban.
Will always be that tell. We never talked about his batting very much, did we? It wasn't an overly fluent player.
South Africa's just a little bit lost. I feel prolific. Like it's one of those things where they've got wonderful cricketers in all three formats and they're just a little bit lost because what's South Africa's big series? Australia, probably. And is that arrogant to suggest that?
We wouldn't know because as Australians, we believe everything revolves around us.
That's right.
So... Yeah.
That's right.
I haven't observed international teams playing against each other until India-England, really, and I'm 35.
A couple of matches I can think of. Well, they lost to Sri Lanka at home. Sri Lanka beat them at home, which was a massive result. That's when Dick Weller got 150. It was like he did that before Stokes did Stokes, and the game's just lost because it's not a... You know, I just feel like so many times in... Maybe putting the Australian lens on it, but there's so many great matches and great moments in Test history where if it doesn't involve England, Australia, or India, it's like...
Yeah.
Nah, it's fourth grade. I'm talking about Dick Weller batted with number 11 for about an hour and a half and he was bombing Steyn. He had about 153 not out, something like that, and he won the game. And Sri Lanka won the series in South Africa, which was like a massive result for them. It was about a year before 2019.
Wasn't Dick Weller cool as Sakura?
Oh, maybe. Was it?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it wasn't Dick Weller. It was cool as Sakura, I think. It was...
I got that wrong.
It was one of the best innings. People, it was better than Stokes' innings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In the fourth innings there.
Well, I'm going to have to Google that now because I've made a huge mistake.
So, yeah.
Oh, well, now we'll never know. Well, I've made a mistake probably, and that's that. Anyway, yeah, so the point being about Faf, like he's been in a side where I suppose he had De Villiers in the side as well for a period, now transitioning into Quinton de Kock's era, and they're just ravaged with political stuff in South Africa with their board.
Kusal Pereira.
Pereira, yep.
Apologies to everyone.
Kusal Pereira.
Who realised that as Australians we don't know other countries.
Yeah, well, my point's made exactly.
Exactly.
My point's made exactly. Perfectly done.
Mm. I think Kulisagra is a bowler, so I think you're closer than me. Apologies.
All right, well, Mark Butcher's on the show. This is our longest ever segment we've gone for.
And it should be said, upon Faf's retirement, we made a impassioned plea to South African cricket for media relations to have him on the show. And after initial, enthusiasm, we were informed the other day that he respectfully declined. And you know what? I'm peeking behind the curtain there, but we'll always hold a candle for you, Faf. Faf? Ooh, got him. We'll have him. We'll get him one day. It's okay.
I guess today is Mark Butcher, as you already know, because you can read and you can listen to the words that I said at the beginning of this show. So, of course, all of our guests this summer are brought to you by Ponting Wines. You can use the code GETAFEW to get 10% off the price of a case. You've heard us speak many times about Ponting Wines, the reds, the whites. Well, those are really the only two options you can get, but they're both wonderful, and I can attest to that personally and privately. If you want to DM me that, don't DM me that. Use the code GETAFEW for 10% off the price of a case at pontingwines.com.au. Here he is. Here's the great man, Mark Butcher.
Suchin Tendulkar.
B, I love you if you ain't running game. Say my name.
Virat Kohli.
Ain't calling me baby, better say my name.
The other day, I would call, you would say, baby, how's your day?
All right, he has been the standout commentator for Indian broadcaster Star Sports in the India v England series. His analysis is bang on, he's subtle, he's light, there are strings to the bow. And as English journalist Nick Holt recently wrote, he poked fun at Kohli for not walking when bowled, questioned second test pitch, and failed to hide exasperation at the TMO's Rahane review. Anyway, Mark Butcher's gone home now. We don't know why.
Unrelated. He was on rotation.
And he's also a storied English cricketer in his own right. But we're here to talk about England versus India. And he joins us on The Great Cricketer. Butch, welcome.
Gentlemen, very, very good to see you. Yeah, I mean, I've got no idea. The plane ticket just appeared under my door after after day two. I was always coming back. It was a hell of a lot of fun. Doing anything cricket-related in India is a lot of fun. You get to see the good, the bad, and the ugly of everything, and it's brilliant to be in a country where cricket is so important, you know, as opposed to the UK.
Yeah. Oh, and I think it's important to get the truth out early as well. Like, we're loving covering India versus England. It's so good to talk about teams that aren't Australia, and the cricket's been played in a really good spirit. There don't seem to be as many kind of social flashpoints. There's so much skill on offer, and there's so much to talk about. I mean, like, how did you enjoy covering those first two tests there in person?
Yeah, no, I loved it. I haven't had the chance to do a great deal of test cricket. In fact, I reckon in the last month and a half, those are the four test matches that I've commentated on or been sort of an integral part of the commentary team. You know, I've done 15 years of wall-to-wall T20. So it was unbelievably good to get the chance to cover England in Sri Lanka and then in this. The beauty of it is, I mean, I'm quite lucky in that I can remove myself from having represented England. It's kind of, it doesn't matter to, I don't genuinely don't care who wins when I'm watching cricket matches. But I get from your guys' point of view, it must be brilliant to watch a game that you have no skin in. You know, you've got no emotional investment one way or the other. You can, enjoy the cricket for what it is. Laugh and poke fun at people on both sides and have no recriminations for it. So it's great fun. And, you know, India is the center of the world as far as cricket's concerned. So it's kind of, it is the most important thing going on in people's lives at that time, which is extraordinary, really.
Yeah. I mean,
hello, baby.
I definitely.
Hey, baby.
come and say hello. Okay, a quick hello, and then you go and have some breakfast. Okay, pleasure. Say hello.
Oh, hello.
Hey, say hey. Hey. Okay, go and have some breakfast.
For those who can't see or not watching on YouTube, who have we just met there, Butch?
That was India. That's my youngest daughter. The youngest of four little girls.
Brilliant.
Well, lovely. some of them are little and some of them aren't. Yeah.
Which let's
called India, but not to gain clicks or followers from India, but because I was in India when she was just about to be born and had to fly back, and it shortens beautifully to Indy. That's nice. It.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Now that's where we differ, because we'll do anything for clicks. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's right.
The toddlers will be.
We're going to exchange views actually on how to get clicks. But, yeah.
Now look, I want to talk, Butch, about you. I'm sure you've answered this many times privately and publicly, but second test, Jack Leach is bowled to Rahane. It's given not out. I'm sure everyone knows exactly what I'm talking about, but I'll tell you anyway. It's given on out. Joe Root gives it the big T. We'll have a look at that upstairs. And the third umpire, the television umpire, doesn't want to review it all the way. You're in the commentary box. I think it's Ajit Agarkar. And is it Shiver as well that you were in the
comments? Shiver, yeah.
Shiver was in the box as well. Absolute complete silence from the boys. and Butch is like, are you in the ear to the director being like, hey, can we have a look at that? Can we roll on the footage? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I had to sort of go back to the director and get a clarification on what the protocol is from his side. And he said, well, I can only give them what they ask for, you know, in terms of the way that the rules work. Although I'm pretty sure that I've worked in other broadcasts whereby the director might say, oh, I've got another angle here. Do you want it? You know, that kind of thing. So I had to clarify that bit because I just couldn't for the life of me understand what was good. When they went to the review the LBW,
yeah.
where that was when my brain exploded.
Yeah.
You know, I'd been kind of very gently trying to say, well, okay, look, it's fine. We're looking at this bit, but I'm pretty sure the bit that the England team are interested in happens a little bit after.
It was when he hit it. Yeah.
And so, you know, gently sort of persuading and being quiet so people could hear the third umpire.
Yeah.
But then when the leg before wicket thing, when they started checking that, that's when my mind was completely blown. It's like the ball's pitched 2 feet outside leg stump. They're asking, you know, I'm saying to the director, get on Joe Root. Joe Root is telling you what they're, you know, he's telling you what they're after.
Yeah.
You know, he's pointing to his pad and the ball ballooning up and going past the glove. He's telling you exactly what England think they're appealing for. But no. And, you know, that was kind of, yeah. To be fair to Shiver and Ajit, I mean, I saw it live. I kind of, you know, immediately it happened. I know what's going on here. They think it's hit the glove on the way out, right? The boys didn't see it live. I had the big monitor right in front of me. We were in a very, very confined, non-socially distancing commentary box. And I had the monitor right in front of my face. And I kind of, you know, I just picked it up immediately. So, you know, I don't know. I have no issue with the boys not seeing it live. Yeah. And then when eventually we got the replay, a couple of minutes after the fact, when the next over had started, they both went, oh, you know, sorry. Yeah. Wow. Seen it. Okay. No problem. You know, there was no sort of denial after that, but it was just, I mean, it was an extraordinary, it must've been excruciating to watch on TV.
Yeah. It was amazing as a neutral.
Excruciating funny. Yeah. There's always a fine line. You know?
Yeah. The LBW was about as close as the one that Australia reviewed at Headingley for Leach.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I reckon that was from just inside. The outside the line.
That was
a bad review. But anyway, we've been there before.
So Butch, you know, when you even deign to criticise anything related to cricket in India, even just being in the geographic location of India, how scary in the back of your mind is the long shadow of the BCCI?
And data.
I've got to admit, when I went home in the car that night, I thought, I wonder if I went a little bit too hard on that, too heavy on that at the time. And so it was part of my conversation with the director the next day was to, was to subtly ask about what the protocol was and also get a feeling as to whether or not I was persona non grata, and he was fine. So it was good. But yeah, I mean, it did, you'd be foolish if it didn't cross your mind. But then, you know, the thing that was interesting to me throughout the whole of the two games was just kind of like, well, I'm here to commentate on a cricket match. You know, the people at home just want to hear what I'm seeing happening or what I think is happening. They don't, you know, if they don't agree, that's fine. I have no issue with that. But why would I censor what I'm thinking because of social media or with the possibility that I might get sacked? That part sort of kicked in a couple of days later and thought, oh, I really don't want to get sacked. Yes. This is good work. You know, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. Hanging out with Nick Knight. Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you, Butch, about, you know, the series as a whole coming into this series. I wonder if how the rest of the world perceives what happened in Australia and especially the Gabba and India winning that series. Is it sort of was the perception of it, you know, a bit of a fluke, an amazing result, really good entertainment, or was it sort of acknowledgement that the Asian century has begun and this is how it's always going to be for the next 300 years?
Yeah, possibly both, actually. I mean, it's always good. It's always good fun for us to see you guys lose. Yes, I mean,
of course,
you know,
yeah.
that's which is, you know, vice versa. Understood. yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, incredible that they kept going for the win when they didn't need to. Incredible that a team that was basically, you know, half the team nobody would have recognized before it started wins. Incredible that, you know, back to back, they've done it twice in the space of what, 3 years or something to win in Australia. Incredible. All of those things are utterly extraordinary. So, I mean, it was an incredible moment for the sport because it was so visible and so extraordinary. And of course, if anything that involves India is means that it gets amplified 20 times the amount that something normal happening would have done. On that score, it's great for the game. Australia have done a great service to everyone. Thank you. We bless you.
How come Australia always lose a series which, like, you know, push the game forward, like 2005 Ashes, good for Test cricket? Yeah. Can we have something?
We're the baddies. Are we the baddies? Yeah.
You are the baddies. Yeah. But no, I mean, so yeah, it was viewed as an extraordinary thing. I mean, there is a flip side to that because the behemoth that is Indian cricket already quite rightly sort of runs the game, you know, and I have no issue with that. I got a journalist asking me yesterday about, you know, how do I feel about the fact that the centre of the cricketing universe is no longer Lords? And I'm like, well, it hasn't been that, as far as I'm concerned, it hasn't been that since the 1950s. You know, I don't care. I mean, it's an extraordinary story. It's an extraordinary sort of path that they've gone on to become sort of like the financial powerhouse. And now, you know, it looks like they might well become the playing powerhouse of the sport as well. And if anybody was going to kind of make sure that the game didn't wither away and die, it's going to be them. So I have no issue with that. But there is one slight downside. It is, and it comes with the fans now sort of thinking, knowing that they are the best in the world, and kind of just giving everybody heaps because of that, you know, in an extremely unhumorous manner, which you guys being from Australia know all about. You know?
Yeah, 100%. I think you talked about. I think you coined Australian exceptionalism last time you were on the call, and I actually did take exception to it.
Yeah.
I just want to picking up on what you said before, Butch. I think one different. I mean, I haven't even prepared this question anyway, but like one difference between Australia and England is that, like, in Australia we're so insecure as a country that we just look to any kind of daddy across the length of our nationhood. You know, first it was England, and then it was the US, and now we're sort of looking into Asia. We just need a daddy to hold our hands. We're trying to work out where our financial, center is, but then also where our cultural center is. So with England defeating us, with India defeating us, we sort of say, oh, well, we'll just go with them for the next couple hundred years. That'll be fine. Whereas I feel like it might be a little bit more difficult for England with, you know, a deeper history of empire. Does England, the country, look to India as the powerhouse, as kind of, I guess, as softly as Australia does?
Yeah, I think it's undeniable. I think if you're trying to kid yourself that is not the case, then you're frankly a lunatic. And I've been reading a bit too much Bill Gates 5G COVID vaccine sort of nonsense. You know, that it's undeniable that they are the powerhouse of the game. And I think what comes with that, from a British or English point of view, perhaps, is the idea that this eventually happens all the time. You know, you kind of like, you start off as sort of running the thing and inventing the thing, and eventually everyone gets better at it than you. Everyone starts making more money out of it than you, and you kind of like, oh great, thanks for your help. But the one thing that lingers from the point of view of whether it be Australia or India now is that the resentment of the past colonialism always lingers on. And so even though you're no threat, they just give you hell anyway, you know, like it's their birthright to slag off England. I mean, you know, the amount of comments I got about sort of like my arrogance for sort of questioning the pitch maybe, or you know, I had a joke with Sonny Gavaskar or doing the sort of like the star wraparound show about Ashwin in the first innings. He was moving like he'd been, you know, he'd been put on a rack or something. His back was knackered and he couldn't get around. And I just said, you know, sometimes he looks like he's 20 years older on the field. I'm talking about his mobility. Oh my God, I'm in Chennai. What the hell did I say that for? It was a joke.
Effigies.
It was a joke. So, you know, it's all good.
So just picking up on that as well, you did mention in a few pieces that if when you do make very light humorous remarks or offhand comments, that you will get absolutely slagged off. And you talked about a bit of a humour difference there as well. Like, how does that manifest? Yeah. Are you just talking about social media exclusively, or are you getting stopped on the street, or what does slagged off look like?
We didn't get out of the hotel, so I mean, that might have been a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was literally hotel ground, and if there was no game on, more hotel. So nothing like that. I think it's because everything is translated into print, you know, whether that be online print or newspapers. And so, you know, something that you say with a wry smile and a chuckle that's on television does translate really badly when they write your words down. For example, I think I said, again, the presenter asked me something like, oh, do you think England will hope that Ashwin is tired after his batting, too tired to bowl well in the second innings? I said, tired? I think they're hoping he pulls a hamstring, you know, ha, 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 you know, very, very funny. Sonny laughs, she laughs. And then, you know, the next day it appears in print and it's, you bastard, why are you wishing somebody, you know, wishing injury on other players and stuff. Yeah. So that's all it is. You know, I'm sure the people sat at home in their living room understood that I was joking, but as soon as you write it down, it doesn't look quite the same.
Hey, third test coming up on, when's that start? Wednesday.
Yeah.
Butch, now you toured India 2001. You actually played at Ahmedabad. It must have been the last game that England played there. A couple of runs for yourself as well.
Two or three, yeah. I think they might have played there back in, I think they played there in 2012 when England won.
Okay, right.
Series. I think that was the first test and England lost.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, I've seen the pictures of the stadium. It looks utterly incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, bigger than the G, for goodness sake. I mean, it's just mental.
Mm.
So I'm sorry not to be there, but I mean, it was always the plan that I was going to be coming back, because it was a late add-on to my trip to the Sri Lanka trip.
Mm. And also stuff you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I make some runs in that game?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You
got 50 and 92.
Oh, well, blimey. Mm. I
Trescothick got 99 and Sachin scored 100. Obviously fond
Sachin
memories.
I think Craig White might have got 100.
He got 100 as well. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was sick, I think. I remember that.
Oh, okay.
I was not feeling very well and kept having to leave the field, sort of, you know, drinks breaks and stuff.
Right, right, right.
I gutted, actually. It's one of those things you look back on and think, I really, really wish I'd made 100 in India, a test 100 in India. I used to get slagged off for being crap at playing spin and stuff. So it would have been quite nice to have made one of those 50s, 100. But yeah. There you go.
And were the pitches fair back then, or were they make them spin?
Well, I mean, they spin. This is the thing. It's very difficult to have a grown-up conversation about the surfaces. They turn, yeah. I mean, and why would you have an issue with that? There is no issue with the ball spinning whatsoever. My issue with the last surface was that if you're saying that it's okay for the ball to burst through the surface from the first over of the game, then we're going to have some very short test matches, you know, around the world.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of sort of false equivalence going on. Oh, you know, well, we don't complain if the ball swings and seams at the Gabba.
Mm.
or at Lords or whatever. And I'm like, well, you know, if you, that's fine, but I don't think that's quite the same. So if you turned up at the Gabba and there were 2-inch crevasses running down the length of the pitch before you tossed up,
that'd be great.
You'd sort of be a little bit like, well, that's not, that's pretty poor. You know, that's been underprepared, or they haven't watered it enough or whatever. And you know, so my point, the only point I was trying to make about this one, and it's going to start again now because everyone's going to watch this, was that the game, England didn't lose the game because of the pitch. And yes, India are absolutely within their rights to prepare surfaces for home advantage, as everybody else is. But it was so underprepared that I was worried that I was going to knock pieces out of it by rubbing my fingers on it during the pitch report on before a ball had been bowled. And I still, you know, I maintain that is not, that's not suitable, I'm afraid. You know, fine for the pitch to turn. But England played 2 test matches in Gaul, and from ball one, the ball turned like that. No issue. But the ball wasn't exploding through the surface all the way through the game.
That's good. In the interest of the adult conversation, how would you... How would you kill Ashwin?
Why do you hate India, Butch? What's your problem?
That'll look fine in print.
Yeah, write that down. Yeah. Oh, the video stopped working.
Sorry.
In the interest of, like, how people have responded to that kind of comment, where you're making a nuanced point about the nature of the behaviour of the ball off the wicket, right? Which is different to the any side spin or the violence of the spin. It's about it's about behaviour and being able to read it. But people will say in response to that. They might say in response, well, Rohit hit 161 India managed X amount of 500 plus runs. So there's clearly a certain skill to being able to deal with wickets or pitches that that do that as well. And India was able to do that. So how do you counter that?
Well, there's no denying that absolutely. I mean, we saw some of the best wicket keeping, the best entertainment from wicket keepers that you're ever likely to see because of that surface, because of the fact that the ball would explode and bounce and, you know, whatever else. You know, it was great. And I'm not saying that it wasn't entertaining to watch, but I'm also saying that Ashwin's 100 was scored when his team, India were 300 ahead in the game when he walked to the crease, right? And the match was over as a contest on the evening of the first day. It was done. There was no way on earth, with them getting 300 in the first innings and the pitch moving from looking like sort of, you know, something at the bottom of a dried out river on day one to looking like the bottom of a dried out river that elephants had been trampling all over and spraying stuff all over the place. There was no way on earth that game was a contest from there. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't diminish the skill of what Ashwin did with bat or ball, or what Rohit did. That's not the point. The point is that the game only lasted for, the pitch was designed to last for about 2 days tops. And the game only went beyond that because England bowled so badly on the first day and Rohit played superbly, right? And so the wider point is, if that surface is okay and if people were happy with that, then you might as well make test matches 3 days or 4 days, because you're not going to need the fifth one. If the ball is exploding through the top in the first over of the first day. India won the game fair and square, no issue. But that's, you know, it's a wider cricketing point that if you underprepare a pitch to that degree, you know. So that's all I got to say, really.
And so there are different different audiences have dealt with these questions in different ways, depending on where you are, whether you're online or in the circles that you run in. What was the conversation like at the ground in India about the surface among professionals? And if you wouldn't mind, I know that the conversations are different on air to off. If you could give any insight into the perspectives from people who, you know, at the sides of their mouths in the green room about the wicket.
Well, I mean, the agreement was that we were all pretty much in agreement that the game was unlikely to last very long. All I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the guys have different masters and things like that.
The
thing that surprised me the most is the amount of colleagues and former players who all of a sudden, perhaps because of where this took place, quite happy with the ball going through the top. Yeah. They were, people need to learn to play on different surfaces, all this kind of stuff. Of course they do. But if they'd have been playing in a game where literally with the new ball, the first ball just banged through, went straight through the surface, and there was a huge explosion, everyone would have been up in arms about it. Nobody, I've never seen anybody complain about the ball turning or the ball seaming or whatever it might be. You might have a few grumbles, but it's basically a cricketing no-no. The minute the ball starts going through the top, particularly before there's been anywhere, if it happens on day 3.5, day 4, day 5, you expect that because you've had big lads with spikes running up and down on it. But before anybody's done any of that for it to do that, I just don't think it's good enough. However, I enjoyed watching the game, and India absolutely deserved their win. So there's no sour grapes here.
Mm. So it's moving on to the third test, Butch. Like, what do you expect to happen? Because, I mean, the sort of talk about this pink ball. No one really knows what to expect from the SG pink ball. I think they've been using the Kookaburra pink ball domestically in India. It's a new pitch. Yeah. It's a new stadium. I feel like England going into this game, if they're looking at any of these four matches, they thought that's our best chance to win a game. Mm-hmm. So, with the rotation of the squad as well, who are you expecting to play first and foremost?
Well, I mean, Jimmy will play for sure. Mm-hmm. And they'll be hoping that Jofra's elbow injuries or that the injections cleared up his elbow injury. But there's a very good chance that England will still need to play two spinners, I think. I don't think... India, given the way that they played, that India will leave it so that there's so much green grass and that it's so moist that England will be able to get away with playing four seamers and just the one spinner. So, so it'll probably be, if they'll probably look pretty similar to the team that played in the first test, it'll be Anderson, Archer. They'll probably try and make more use out of Stokes. I mean, the Stokes thing is really bizarre to me. And he bowled two overs in that whole match. And England said there's no injury, there's no problem. But he got two overs on day one, on a day when we got slaughtered. That 300 on day one was worth 450. So I don't know what's happening there. But that's what I think will happen. And then they might think about, Johnny Bairstow batted at three in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Zach Crawley would have been England's preferred choice, but he fell over and smashed his wrist up before the first test. So there might be one change in the batting lineup. Dan Lawrence might sit it out, and they might replace him with one of those two guys. But other than that, I think that's pretty much all we can expect. The pink ball thing's really interesting because you guys knocked over India for 36 with the pink ball, didn't you, Adelaide?
Mm. Mm. During the day, though. That was interesting. It was during the day.
It was in the morning, wasn't it? Yeah. It was the morning of the third day. So, and it didn't appear to do a great deal under the lights. Nobody knows. I mean, no one's got a clue.
Yeah.
I think you'd think if there's grass on the pitch and, there's a bit of carry and whatever, then there's a chance that the lights might have an effect. But in India, generally speaking, once you get beyond sort of, nightfall, you get dew, and that's not particularly conducive to the ball swinging around. So I have no idea what's going to happen. I really don't. I guess the only thing that is known is that recently India have had no fun against the pink ball. And so England will take that as being, a big advantage for them.
Mm.
Just on the rotation policy, Butcher, on the one hand, England can leave key players on the sidelines for big tests. On the other, you then develop 130 players with international experience when you've got to play 75 tests this year. So, how do you see it?
Yeah, I mean it's really really tricky. It's such a tightrope for them to walk. The one thing that throws a big spanner into the works, I think, particularly on a PR level, is the IPL and players potentially missing international cricket, but then doing 6 weeks in bubbles and whatever in the to do the IPL, and England will I sympathise with the fans on that one, but England will turn around and say, well, we've got a World T20 in India, we want as many of our players to get as much experience in those conditions playing T20 as possible. IPL is exactly the right way to do that, and if we win the World T20, then the whole thing has been thoroughly justified. So I have respect for them for what's happened in this series, because it would have been very easy, having won the first test match in Chennai, to kind of throw out all of those plans and to kind of, to play Anderson again and then hope nothing happens to him before the pink ball test. But England kind of back the players that they have to be able to make like like for like replacements. And okay, they, you know, they won the first one by 200 and lost the second one by 300. Mm. But I don't think that the changes in the team made that happen. Mm. You know, Jimmy Anderson did look totally ineffective on the first day of the first innings of the first test in Chennai. And it was only when when the game got right to the end that then the reverse swing started to happen in the second innings that he came into it. But like you say, psychologically, the Indian batsman would probably rather not face Jimmy Anderson. But I still think it wouldn't have made any difference in the last test. I really don't.
Butch, where's England cricket going? What's the target? Where's it going towards? Because I feel like from about 2015 when Trevor Bayliss came in, it was like 2019 World Cup Ashes. That's what we're putting all our eggs into that basket. Now, I ask you that question because I'm not really sure even where Australian cricket's going necessarily. It seems to be going towards the end of the Langer era, whenever that might be, I think. But what's England's goal now? Is it the T20 World Cup?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, the world... The white ball comps are just so have taken over in importance to such an extent everywhere, not just in England. But if England are prioritising white ball cricket, then you know that it's quite important, right? Because for years we pretty much ignored it unless it was a month before whatever World Cup was coming up. Really, really important, massively high profile. Owen Morgan kind of stuck around to captain the side through this. Here is the legacy, you know, we'll win a 50 over World Cup, 20 over World Cup, and then maybe he might go. I'm not saying that England's policy is based around one guy, but it does seem as though this is very, very important. And then the other thing is the Ashes at your place, which is why, you know, again, why they're trying as best as they can to make sure that they have the pick of all of their very best players come October. You know, which is part of the reason for the rotation policy. And the other thing is, mate, I mean, I've just done it for however long, 6.5, 7 weeks. Hotel quarantines, bubbles, et cetera, are really, really tough. You know, it was kind of cool for me. I got away from the little one for a little while. I was able to sit and read some books and write some songs. You know, have a bit of headspace of your own. But, you know, after 5 days of that, you're just kind of like, this is bad. Yeah. And I can't imagine what it's like to be a player in those circumstances whereby, you know, one of the great saving graces of being on a tour is that you kind of get away from the cricket for a little while, if you haven't, particularly if it's not going so well. But imagine that all you're doing is you're with the team in the hotel, you go to the ground, you play, you bag them, you come back, you're back in with the team again, you can't go anywhere, you can't see anybody, you can't, you know, do that for 2 months, let alone do that for a year. Well, it would be 18 months come the middle of the summer because most of the England players have been doing it since July.
Yeah.
That's no good. That's no good. So it's important. It's an important policy, and I'm kind of pleased that they're sticking to it with as much integrity as they can.
Well, you've obviously just given away, Butch, that the key there is the Ashes then for England. That was just a long way of saying that winning over here is exactly what you guys want to do. Well, so.
I mean, of course it is. It always is. But, you know, they're, and particularly given what's just happened to you blokes at home against India, England are sort of thinking, we've got a really big chance. But, I mean, that's always the way, isn't it? You wouldn't want it any other way.
Of course.
You wouldn't want it any other way.
And just so with that in mind, I mean – like, I genuinely think you're one of the top commentators in world cricket, and I think you showed that in that. Well, there's big words, obviously, coming from me. some internet bloke. Yeah, yeah. but I guess it begs the question as well. I mean, you know, have you got a gig out here for the Ashes? And if so, do you dream of sitting next to Junior and Warney just chewing the fat on whatever they're talking about, like supercars or something?
On a nightly basis, yeah, I do. I dream a lot of that. no, I haven't got a gig. No, I haven't got a gig. You know, I'm freelance. I'm freelance and available. There we go. You know, I don't know. I don't know if foreigners are allowed. Are they allowed?
That's on the nose. Yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, Butch, thanks so much for joining us. I should say I almost stuffed this interview by saying that it was tomorrow morning and turning up tonight. So thank you for being available due to my exclusive mistake that Higo's made
That's
sure he disowned.
Right. That's fine. I mean, you know how rushed off our feet everybody is at this this juncture in our world's history. So you were lucky.
Cheers, Butch.
All right.
Who the hell are you?
Suchin Tendulkar.
You know. You all know exactly who I am.
Suchin Tendulkar.
Say my name.
Virat Kohli.
That's right. Now, say my name.
Suchin Tendulkar.
You're goddamn right.
Okay, quick shout out to our wonderful, wonderful friends at Budgie Smuggler. Here goes. Now, if you are watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see for the first time that we, in fact, are accessorizing with Budgie Smuggler kit because Budgie Smuggler ain't just the stuff that covers your, well, as our other friends would say, junk.
Who's our other friends?
Wouldn't even name them during this sponsor segment.
Oh, okay, right.
Wouldn't even name them. And that's how I normally talk.
Yeah, 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 that is, yeah. As it's a quite friend. Disconcerting, yeah.
Yes. But you can catch any accessory there at Budgie Smuggler. They've also got a range of rugby league kit out at the moment as well.
That's
on
true.
Pre-sale. And it's very much worth having a look at. You can design your own smugglers. Christ, you can do whatever you want.
You can be sun smart all year round with Budgie Smuggler. Now, I learnt recently, Pez, that February is the warmest month in Melbourne.
Did you learn that by experience or by research?
Research.
Of course.
Research.
How does that manifest?
You I don't just, really leave the house. Really leave the
just
house.
A week, just a Google search? What is Melbourne's hottest month?
Yeah, basically, yeah. And then get the averages of each month. So, you know, right time of the year to be sun smart, sun safe. And, of course, with this new vaccine, knocking about Pez. Now, I don't know if you saw this, but in Israel, they're talking about the Pfizer vaccine after the second jab, something like 98% success rate in preventing deaths, which seems pretty good.
That seems pretty good.
That seems pretty good. So I'm thinking that maybe travel ain't that far away.
Right.
And having some of this kind of gear, this kind of gear to Israel. I wouldn't be wearing this kind of gear in Israel.
Okay.
But there are other places you can go.
Israel's meant to be a good circuit.
Is it? You notice how like there's heaps of like Paris of the East? If you Wikipedia Paris of the East,
oh, yeah.
There's like 42 different cities.
People love referencing themselves to Paris. Even in, you know, you've got the Paris Center, the New York end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Both cities are pretty good.
Yeah, why can everywhere just be good?
Mm. It's a good city.
Anyway, what I'm saying is that, Pez, that you can get back out there. I don't think we're that far away from getting back out there.
Starting to look good. I mean,
starting to. I don't
want
to jump
the gun. Coronavirus is like a champion in that you should never write it off.
Never write it off.
New strain in the old sewage. Boom. Yeah. Vaccine means nothing.
Couple of drops in the old sewage.
Couple of drops. Ah, it's a new strain. Vaccine doesn't work. Oh, okay. Back to the old drawing board then. Anyway, let's trivialise it. Millions dead. You know, if you take certain antibiotics for your skin, you can be more exposed to the sun. So you need to look after your, you need to look after your skin.
Yeah.
Just all reasons to go to budgiesmuggler.com. Harmonizing.
Use the code CHAMP for free shipping at checkout. All right, Pez. Hashtag AskTJC.
Let's do it.
Just a quick shout out to Patreon as I fuck up with my headphones. Quick shout out to Patreon. Where we episode 28, I want to say.
Sure.
Of Ask TJC Fridays.
Sure.
I've absolutely fucked my head.
You fucked it.
Where there was some interesting comments this week that we had. And we're also going to be dropping the audio exclusively for the India-England test series. The audio only, because it's going to be, it's a YouTube really exclusive series, but the audio only is going to be.
If Tube isn't your thing.
If Tube isn't your thing.
If you multitask. You know, if you've got kids, whatever, I'm giving reasons for multitasking, then you can grab the audio. If you join up to Patreon there, we'll chuck it out there. We don't want to flood the feed otherwise. And, and also sign up to Patreon so you can find out why we've had a record number of comments in the last few weeks of people exclusively saying, please, daddy. That's the sort of stuff you get. Just the dad stuff.
Patreon.com/Greg Cricketer. Will Hollier writes in, Pez. This email is entitled Johnny Bairstow, Alfering Dad, and Shit Aussie Cunts. Dear Pestrel Finn and Let's Get Higgy, long-time Patreon member and big fan of the show, my question is set in the Shane Warne stand in the Aegeus Bowl as England played Australia in a World Cup warm-up game. Me and Daddy took our excellent seats square of the wicket a few rows up, 5. Finchie cops one early, which brings about a field change, and my favourite modern-day cricketer, J.M. Bairstow, was in sight. After seeing off a few mid-morning wet cunts, I pluck the courage to join the army of children of the advertising boards hunting for signatures. Both of my parents were born, raised, and bleed Yorkshire. So much so, my grandfather didn't speak to my mum for the first 14 years of her life, as he wanted a boy that would grow up to play for God's great country. This explains why I'm draped in a wearable Yorkshire rose flag. That and the fact I'm only 27 at the time. From a young age, it was drilled into me, you support Yorkshire CC with vigour and gusto. Even though I've always lived and been privately educated in Oxford, as my accent suggests. Fuck, all right, mate.
Okay.
As I skip down the few rows of stairs, 7, a group of Aussies start having a crack at my beloved Johnny, rolling out the lazy sledges about pasty skin, red hair, and losing the mitts to Joss.
That's grim.
Me and my JB take no notice. Whilst waiting patiently by the boundary rope, the abuse intensifies with Bairstow, retorting in a tete-a-tete with the fracas climaxing. I give sweet Johnny a look to say, take no notice of them, Johnny. They're just jealous. Suddenly, D.A. Warner spoons one up in the air, out backwards, out towards our direction. Bairstow takes a catch, turns, and sends off the bogans back to the shed, as well as Shady Davey. This is my opportunity. I elbow the little people with stupid little bats out of the way. As my idol comes to the rope to sign some autos, I seize my moment. Would you sign my Yorkshire flag, please, Johnny? I say breathlessly. Clearly still pumped from dismissing someone nearly as bad as Keaton Jennings in English conditions, he retorts, Yorkshire? The only thing in common you have with Yorkshire is the pudding, lad. Now, yes, the rig isn't what it was in my early 20s, 16, but the salad makes up for it. I turn to trudge up the steps, 12, to a barrage of laughter from all. When I spot my dad pointing and joshing with the said Aussies mocking my rig and endeavours, he's hardly Chris Hemingway himself.
He's Hemsworth.
Chris Hemingway. And if he showed more affection instead of being a hard-nosed Yorkshire cunt, maybe I wouldn't feel the need to comfort eat. As I approach my seat, he sticks the final alpha knife in my rotund back, offering the Aussies some of my beers.
Some
of them. Yeah.
Have some of this.
My question is, do I accept my hero was on the back foot in a sledging war and therefore used me as an alpha pawn, or that the Aussies were right, JB's heyday was over? He has fallen behind people like Denley, Burns and Simbly in the test team, and it was time to idolise a new player and team, most likely Ollie Pope and Surrey. Yours truly, Will Hollier. P.S. Any chance bringing TGC to Edinburgh Fringe Festival next summer?
Oh, thanks, Will. Look, I think whenever we deal with these, and what this is an alpha hierarchy question.
Very hard to take you seriously right now.
Yeah. It's an alpha hierarchy question.
Yeah.
And like it is with maths, not mm-hmm. that I've ever been very good at that,
mm-hmm.
it's quite formulaic. You literally need to understand the pyramid. You need to understand the prism. You need to have read Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
And understand the cricket is a cock show. It's pretty simple. Except yeah. when it comes to Johnny Bairstow.
Yeah.
And I say that with a deeper well of respect that I could ever communicate with words. Johnny Bairstow inverts, as far as I can understand from these stories, Johnny Bairstow inverts the game when it comes to this social stratosphere stuff.
Okay.
Social hierarchy stuff.
Yeah, I'm listening.
So I don't know. I think Will might be right and that Johnny has used Will yeah. as a crutch to regain his alpha status.
Yeah.
I can never be sure, and that's why I find him so compelling a player. He's a complete mystery. My mate a few years ago went and did a poker tournament. He's never played poker in his life.
Okay.
Poker was big a few years ago in Australia.
Yeah.
And his claim was that he actually ended up finishing second in the tournament because he kept doing things that others didn't expect because he didn't know what he was doing. He says, I finished second. And people say, we just couldn't pick you.
Yeah.
And I feel like Bairstow's a bit like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's why I desperately want to interview him and speak with him, because I've always been fascinated with players that invert the pyramid or just fuck around with it a little bit.
What I like about him is that no one understands him, I think. I think people, because when you try to observe Besto and his actions, you always lay the prism of like understanding the conventional hierarchical systems and structures that are in place. But he sits outside that. He's not even a Sigma male, which we've learned is the outside. It's not that. Although he is using some Sigma activities in alphaing Will in this situation.
He can draw on every level. Mm. Alpha, Beta, Omega, Sigma, and the other ones.
We're just desperate to have a chat. I just need to know.
Say that with the deepest respect.
Well, Pez, it's an Ashes year.
Yeah.
Did he get picked up in the IPL?
I think he would have.
Yeah, I think he would. Yeah. He might have been retained by someone. Yeah.
He and Warner.
He wasn't. He wasn't sold, so he might have been retained.
Yeah.
Yeah. He plays. He plays with Warner, doesn't he? Yeah. He opens a batting with him.
He looks like he's, according to Butch, he's going to be back in the side.
Well, because he was rested for the first two tests, wasn't he? So he's back in. He's in and around the group.
Besto is exactly the kind of character that can lift you to something special.
How'd you do that, mate? I don't know.
Is Besto the most sought after interview we've ever wanted on the Great Cricketer?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. There's been a couple of white whales out there.
There's a couple of white whales, and
it was in the works,
Gotta say, there's a couple in the works. Pretty exciting. We thought we were close to Best, though, when he was going to come out for the Melbourne Stars. So right. Discussions had commenced. Not with him. Not with him.
No, he doesn't even know what this is. And he's probably going to be very suspicious.
And rightly so.
But I just want to get around him, and he in turn big time. Get around me.
I would love 10 beers with Besto, and I don't say that as like a...
Will's closer to us than... Yeah. Sorry, Will's closer to Besto than us.
Yeah.
He's had the experience.
I think Besto's got a lot to offer cricket.
Yeah, I agree.
Socially.
I agree. Well, that's all the time we've got for this week, and what a time it was.
it was a lot of time that we had for it.
It was a lot of time. I set aside a lot of time. A lot of time. Thanks for sticking with us in this time where cricket's not really happening, but fuck, there's so much cricket. It's happening all the time and everywhere.
Talk about now.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it? This is real cricket.
It's real. Other teams play.
Other teams play, and it's good.
And it's good, and it's cricket.
And people are getting into finals as well in Australia. Yep. It's good, and it's cricket.
It's good. They're playing cricket, and there's no other things. It's just they play the game, and we talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's not carry on.
Oh, it's a bit of carry on.
Is it? And we need that. Give it a few weeks. Fucking desperate for something. Yes. Someone say something.
Someone say something. I'm bored.
I'm so bored.
This show wouldn't exist. All right, thank you very much to Mark Butcher for joining the show. I think that's Butcher's third time he's been on the show.
Is it? Yeah.
I think so.
He's a very generous guest.
Very generous guest. Very nice guy. And I'll be the arbiter of who isn't. Okay. Pezzy lad, thank you very much.
Thank you. And to you.
See you on YouTube for the start of the India-England third test. Patreon.com/GreyCricketer for hashtag RCDC Fridays. And we'll see the rest of you guys right here next week on the Grey Cricketer podcast.